I've chosen for the title of my talk to you this evening, Ye Are the Temple of God. And I want to read these few verses out of 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses beginning 16 through 23. Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temples ye are. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you seemeth to be wise in this world, let him become a fool, that he may be wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, He taketh the wise in their own craftiness. And again, the Lord knoweth the thoughts of the wise, that they are vain. Therefore let no man glory in men, for all things are yours, whether Paul, or Apollos, or Cephas, or the world, or life, or death, or things present, or things to come, all are yours, and ye are Christ's, and Christ is God. I want to talk to you tonight about the wonderful world of you. You see, we live in a world, and we think of this world as being the world outside, and all of the things of our senses are attached to these things. Everything that we see, everything that we hear, everything that we smell, everything that we taste, everything that we touch, brings some form of communication to the brain. And we live almost completely in this outer world. And we never realize the tremendous world which is our own world, our kingdom within. Ye are the temple of God. And that means that God lives in your temple. He is that infinite indwelling spirit in you, which has taken on your particular garment of flesh. And he is there every moment of your life. Wherever you go, you take your temple with you, and you may worship him. I once asked God, because I was very curious to know how in the world he could know everything in this vast universe and beyond that was going on and keep track of it. How in the world, even though he were the infinite spirit and to him all things were possible, how could he possibly know what each and every one of his creatures was doing every moment? So I went inside and I meditated for a long time, and I asked him this question, and finally the answer came. And he said, the reason I know all things is because I am the indwelling present in every creature, presence I should say, in every creature that I have created. So wherever we go, we take God with us. There is nothing that we can think, say, or do that God is not aware of, because he is living inside of us. We many times do things of which we are ashamed. We cover things and we try to hide them in secret. But it's said that murder will be shouted from the rooftop. And why? Because he is there all the time, watching us, listening to us, knowing everything, every thought, every word, every action that comes forth from us. That's an amazing thing. And sometimes when you stop to think about it, it's a little frightening, isn't it? You think, oh, I thought I got away with this and I didn't do it at all. Because God knows what I've done. Now, he made perfect law, and he has given us free will to choose to follow his perfect law, to work in harmony with it, or to go our own way and misuse our free will and march out of harmony with his perfect law. And in that sense, we either reward or we punish ourselves. Oh, this is the law of the universe. I've had people come to me and actually curse God because of some trouble that they had. I remember long years ago that a man was so possessive of all of the things which he owned that one night his gas station was broken into, or not his gas station, but I should say his drive-in restaurant was broken into. And he heard somebody outside. He lived in a house just in back of it there. So he took a gun and he went out to protect his property. And he found the burglar trying to enter the place and trying to break down the door with an axe. And when the burglar saw him coming with a gun, he threw the axe at him. He missed him and he started to run. Well, the man tried to shoot him, wing him in the leg so that he could stop him and have him arrested because he was so anxious to protect his property. But just then the man bent down and the bullet went all the way up his spine and killed him instantly like that. Well, this man felt terrible. But yet he had taken a human life in order to protect his possessions, those things which rot and rust and fade away and ashes to ashes and dust to dust. And he has lived a life of misery ever since. Well, a child was born to that individual, and the child was very greatly retarded. And it was a boy, beautiful boy, and he had waited for many years to have this son. But at one time he had told his wife that she was not really worthy to have a child of his, and yet she was a good woman. She had done no wrong. And so there he was. And so he came to me cursing God, because God had inflicted so great a punishment on him. And I said to him, why should you feel this way? I said, perhaps the robber got what he deserved because he had done wrong. But I said, your possessions meant so much to you that a man's life has been taken, and perhaps this child was given to you to teach you a great lesson. And this is your punishment, and also the opportunity and the means by which you may get your God realization, if you only would. But he couldn't. And he became embittered toward the whole world. And everything was wrong. He blamed the government. He blamed the place where he was working. Nothing was right any place. And gradually this man was far from well mentally. And this is what can actually happen when we think so much of the possessions that we have on earth. And it's rather a terrible thing to contemplate. You are your world. And you live in the world which you create. But this world within you is a tremendously beautiful, wonderful place if you will only go with God. Did you ever stop to think, really, that you are an exact replica, the microcosmic part of the macrocosmic whole, that everything that is in this outer universe is inside of you? You have the sun, the moon, the stars. You have the space. You have the ocean, the waters within yourself. You have the tributaries, all of the blood streams that are constantly running. You have the center of life in yourself, which is your heart, and all things within you are tied to that center of life. You have within you seven spinal centers, and the seventh one is one, but contains two, the positive and the negative, but still it is one. And from that one that contained the positive and negative within itself, it sent forth that which was dual in this world, in a negative and positive electrical current. And in accordance with the rate of vibration, it built and created all of these things around you. Now the six spinal centers below that seventh spinal center contain these positive and negative forces. And again, we are faced with 6 times 2, which is 12. And we are told about the tribes of Israel. We are told about the tribes of Egypt, and one is fighting the other constantly. The Israelites are the good guys and the Egyptians are the bad guys, and they try to keep you from realizing your spiritual heritage constantly. These forces of good and evil are the two thieves on your own cross. Now, in the beginning, we have been taught in the Orthodox fashion that the only Christ that has ever lived, the only begotten Son of God, was born 2,000 years ago. And that he is the only one. He was the Savior of the world. And we picture him as having died on a wooden cross with nails in his hands and his feet. But this is not the way it actually says in the scriptures, if you will read them. This is what we have been told, you see. And here it says, if I find my spot here. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Of the cross. Not on the cross. Now, your body is referred to variously in the Bible as the cross, the body, the tree, the burning bush, the robe, the temple of the living God. It has many references, but it all refers to your body. Now, every man has this Christ within him. Every man can become a Christ because that is also given to us. Excuse me. I'm getting my papers mixed up here tonight, so it's I have too many of them in here. In any case, it speaks of the blood of the cross. It doesn't speak of the blood on the cross. And again, it is an experience which you go through. I have an old Catholic book which is about so thick. And it's a wonderful book, and there are many questions and answers there. And it gives three types of baptism. Baptism of water, baptism of fire, and baptism of blood. Now, we are not taught about this baptism of blood, but the Hindus have known about it for centuries. It is an experience which every man goes through when he picks up his cross to follow the Christ or Krishna, by whatever name you want to call him. Because God was, and then he sent himself forth from himself in the form of a father. And that father represents spirit. Then, in order to be a father, there has to be a mother. So he also became the divine mother, which is represented by nature. And so he projected his spirit into the womb of nature. And everything that we see created was formed therefrom. This is a tremendous thing. Now, that which first came forth from him was the only begotten Son of God. And it was universal. And it is in every single man, because it says in another part of her that he is the image, the firstborn of every creature. It doesn't say just one, it says every creature. So he is that infinite Christ spirit in you. Now, we have no definite record of Jesus the Christ. We have the Gospels, but this Bible as we know it today first originated in the year 400 A.D. And a man by the name of St. John Chrysostom took a few of the Jewish holy books and put them together and called them the Biblia, which means books. And the Bible as we know it today didn't come into existence until 700 A.D. And many books were deleted from this Bible. Now, if this Bible is supposed to be the total word of God, if we are supposed to believe it verbatim, why was it changed? Why is it? Does it still continue to be revised? Some words added, some words deleted. And now, in order to keep up with modern times, we have another revision that is in modern English. And every time these revisions come into place, then something is taken away that is needed as a guide for the aspirant. The truth is that every scripture the world over is the history of every man's evolution from the human to the divine. I do not deny that there was a Jesus Christ who lived, but it says in our own scriptures that Jesus was the Son of Man. He became the Son of God after he went through the crucifixion. Then he was reborn. The old self, that vile body, fell away from him. And he was reborn, and the whole being, the whole body became new. And he became the Christed One, the Son of God. Now each and every one of us is born the Son of Man. And he didn't say that he was the only one. He said, all of these works that I do, ye may do also. And even greater works than these that I do, ye may do. He said it. He also said, ye are the temple of God. He also said that no disciple can become greater than the master. But if the disciple follows the master, follows the truth which that master teaches, he can become as great as the master. There has been much dissension, many wars down through the century, and it is caused by the devotees. My master is greater than yours. My religion is greater than yours. I have the only truth. And people have been killed in any great numbers. And today we have such narrowness, such bigotry in some of the fundamentalist churches that it is unbelievable. And while claiming to follow this wonderful Christ, who is the Christ of love, whose last and greatest commandment said, a new commandment I give unto you, that you shall love one another as I have loved you, and your neighbor as yourself. Your neighbor is every single one around you, because we are all children of the one Father God. This includes all nations. And yet we profess to be Christians, and we criticize everything and everyone else except what we happen to believe in our own particular narrow way. And this should not be. There are many paths, but they all lead to God. Some go by foot. Some go by bullock cart. Some go on a faster race horse, perhaps. Some go on horse and buggy. Some drive by automobile. And some take the airplane route to God. But everyone is on the path to God. There is not one person in this universe who is not of God and who does not have God within himself, because he is the infinite intelligence, the infinite wisdom, the infinite power, the indwelling spirit in every single part of his creation. And think how this whole world works so constantly, so orderly, that every morning the sun comes up and we have the dawn, and at evening the sun goes down behind the mountains, behind the ocean, and we have the evening, and there's darkness and there's light, so man may rest from the toils of the day. It's a beautiful thing. We have that same thing in our own world inside, because this spiritual eye that we speak of, this single eye, is the optic thalamus gland. The life force enters the body. It is a positive and negative force, and it is that two-edged sword which Jesus spoke about. And it comes in this electrical current and goes straight through to the optic thalamus gland, and it furnishes the light by which these two physical eyes see everything that is going around. But just like you take a picture, that picture that you see is merely a reflection. You do not actually see it. And these two are two thieves on your spiritual cross. I had the experience once of leaving body consciousness. And I was taken above as my astral body was floating above my physical body. And I could see this great light. It was one straight light that was coming from the medulla, going straight through to this point of Christ consciousness here. And then I saw this lesser light, and the thing was in a form of a cross. And God told me that the eyes, when they are open, seeing all of the things of the world which entice them, are again robbing you of the knowledge of this tremendous light that you can come in contact with, that you can actually become absorbed in, where you can enter the kingdom of heaven within yourself and commune with your heavenly Father, if you will but close out the things that these eyes see and focus your full attention at the point between the eyebrows. It takes patience. It takes a tenacity of purpose, a steadfast will in order to reach these goals. Believe me, this path is not for the weak. It is for heroes and heroines, because you need to have everything. You need to love God more than you love yourself, your little self. And yet when you stop to think that the real you is God within you, that this pseudo-self that's out here, I am the body idea, is pure delusion, and you're living in a trap of your own making, to the degree that when your consciousness is awakened to the knowledge of what is the truth within yourself, still you continue to follow the world of the senses, to live in this world of ignorance and darkness out here in order to satisfy all these things. And you don't realize that you have a whole treasure house, a whole storehouse of treasures within yourself. You know, there's a story once told about a woman who had passed on from the physical body, and she came to the gate of heaven. Saint Peter was standing there, and so he asked her her name, and he registered, and he took her inside into a great room. And she was startled to see that there were just rows and rows of shelves all over. And on all of these shelves, they had packages wrapped up with beautiful ribbons on, and all addressed to some individual on earth. And she wondered and wondered what in the world these things were for, and why the names of these people on earth were there, and still they didn't have them. So she finally took her courage in her hand, and she said to Saint Peter, "Saint Peter, may I ask you a question?" He said, "Of course, my child." She said, "Will you tell me what all these packages are doing here addressed to people on earth? Why do they not have them?" He said, "Well, these packages contain all the good things that people desire in their hearts, these people on earth. But they have not opened their hearts to receive them. And so they must remain here on the shelves until they forget the things of this outside world in which they live and turn their eyes to heaven. And when they open their hearts, when they open their consciousness, when they open their whole beings to God, then He will send them all of these great, beautiful, wonderful gifts. These gifts are there for you now. You yourself are one with God this moment. But until you become aware of it, until you realize it, you see, you feel yourself separate from God. But just as the idea of separation began and is contained in just one idea, I am separate from my Father. I have so far to go before I can join with Him, have union with Him. So also is the idea of oneness. It originated with one idea and is contained in one sentence. I and my Father are one. And if you would let go of that one idea of separation and accept with equal intensity the idea of your oneness with the Father, it could happen right now. But you will not do it. You will not permit yourself to do it, because you have programmed your mind. You have been conditioned to believe in the fact that you are separate, that you were born in sin, that you live in sin. Repent, repent. There is only one great sin in this world, and that is this idea of separation from God, because contained in that one idea of separation is contained all of the other sins that could possibly be accredited to you. Do you not realize that? And if you realized who and what you are this moment, all sin would fall away from you, because you could not possibly sin. You would be pure. You would be as He is, always and eternally pure. He is all goodness, all perfection, all light, all power, all wisdom, all beauty, all of the wonderful things of life. And His law is perfect. But He has given man free will to do with as he chooses. Each moment of your life, you have this choice. You can get up in the morning, or you can stay in bed. You can remain in your pajamas or your nightgown, or you can take them off and get dressed. You can take a bath, or you can fail to do so. You can brush your teeth, or you can fail to brush your teeth. You can eat breakfast or do without it. You can go to school or to work, or you can stay home. If you don't go to work, you won't get paid for it, perhaps. But nevertheless, you have that choice. And someone will come along and say, "But that isn't true. I met a man not too long ago, and if I hadn't done what he insisted that I do, he would have killed me." But he still had a choice. He could have died. There is not one moment when you do not have free will. The last time I was in India, I had the privilege of visiting a very great Jivan Mukti, who's supposed to be a completely liberated soul, in Madras. I had never heard of him before, and I was taken there one evening, and he was a very tall, handsome man in spotlessly white garments, and his ashram was immaculately clean, and he looked at me and he said, "Ah, yes, you have come." So I said to him, "Were you expecting me?" "Oh, yes," he said, "we had a vision of you 3 months ago. We knew you were coming." Well, we sat down and had a few minutes conversation, and he invited me back the next day. So the next day we went back, and he undertook to give me, in capsule form, a complete review of Advaitism, which means a belief only in the oneness of God. These people don't believe in duality. God is everywhere equally present, and there is no duality whatsoever. So then he went on to say that man had thought that he had free will, but in truth he did not. That he came with every thought, word, and action planned for him ahead of time. I disagreed with him heartily, and I told him so. So we discussed the thing back and forth and back and forth, and he became very adamant about it. And I knew that I had free will, that I could choose to be good or I could choose to be evil. So I went inside of myself finally, and I said to him, said to God, "God, you must help me out of this. Now, I know this is right. I know the truth. You've got to bail me out here." So finally he gave me the thing to ask him, and I said, "Swamiji, may I ask you a question?" "Ah, yes, yes," he said. I said, "You believe only in the oneness of God. There is no duality any place in the world. Is that correct?" "Yes." I said, "Does God have free will?" "Well, of course God has free will." I said, "Well, if there's only one, and God is it, and he has free will, and we are he, then why do we not have free will?" So he looked at me, and his eyes got bigger, and finally he looked at his disciples, and he pointed them at the boy. He says, "The only thing that's wrong with her is that she thinks too fast for me in English." But it is the truth. You do have this free will every moment. Now, this great light that we spoke of, this is the sun of your being. This is the place where you really become one with your Father in consciousness. You see, your mind really is just gray matter. Your subconscious mind is absolutely blank. It has but one power, and that it has absolutely, supremely. And that is to accept whatever you put into it and put it into action, whether it be bad, good, or indifferent. And as sure as anything, whatever you put into that subconscious mind will take form and return to you in kind, because for every action there is an opposite and an equal reaction. So you have the total responsibility of sorting out the thoughts that come to you. Now, some of the thoughts that cross your mind or that come to you through the enticement of the senses are not good thoughts, but you have the power to reject those thoughts and to think to replace them with something beautiful, something wonderful. And the minute you think of something evil, to take your mind away from that and place it upon God. You will remember that Jesus said, "Resist not evil." That means don't resist evil. Because every time you start out to conquer a bad habit and you resist evil, you are going to be in a war, because it will fight you. Why? Because your mind is dwelling on it and you're giving power to it. You're giving attention to it. But if you refuse to give it attention, it cannot fight by itself. If every time these suggestive thoughts come to you, you will take your mind from them and place them fully upon God, gradually these things will fade away and you will find yourself dwelling in the consciousness of God alone. There's a tremendous story that's told in India. Perhaps some of you have heard it, but I will tell it for those who have not heard it before. It's one of my favorite stories, and it's entitled The Devil and the Bamboo Pole. One time there was a man whose desires for worldly things were so great that he could scarcely contain himself. He didn't have any money. He couldn't go out and buy the things to satisfy his desires at all. And these desires kept mounting and mounting and mounting within himself until he was almost crazy with the idea of the want for possessions. So he sat down and he thought it over one day, and he thought to himself, I've got to satisfy these desires somehow, some way. I don't have any money. What can I do? So as he sat there and thought, all of a sudden the idea came to him that he would go to a man that he had heard gave out mantrams. And of course, when you say a mantram over so many times, it is supposed to produce a given result. So he said to himself, I will go and ask him to give me a mantram that will bring Satan before me. And he said, then when Satan comes before me, I will agree to be his disciple if he will agree to satisfy all my desires. But he thought that over, and he thought it was a wonderful idea. So he went down the road, and he came to this man's place, and he went in, and he told him what he wanted him to give him. And the man was literally shocked. He said, you know what you're doing? He said, asking for a mantram that will bring Satan himself before you? Oh, yes, he knew. He said he had so many desires, somehow he had to get them satisfied. And so the man finally agreed. So he gave him this mantram that would bring Satan before him, and he told him to say it 1,000 times a day for 40 days. And at the end of that time, Satan would appear before him. He could put whatever he had to put before him and either get his acceptance or rejection. So he went home and religiously, shall we say, said the mantram 1,000 times a day. And at the end of the 40 days, all of a sudden, the great blaze of light, there stood Satan, complete with horns, pitchfork, and tail. And he said, yes, my son, what may I do for you? And he said, well, Satan, he said, I am absolutely consumed with the fire of desire. He said, I want to... Who turned the light off? Just went off? It's a little bit loose, maybe. Anyway, he said, I have so many desires that... He said, I just must have them satisfied. So he said, I will agree to be your disciple if you will agree to satisfy all of my desires. Well, Satan stood there a moment and scratched his head and thought the matter over, and he decided that he would accept the man's discipleship. So he agreed to do that. He said, very well, my son. He said, I will accept you as my disciple, but on one condition. He said, that is this. That if you fail at any time to keep me busy, I will come back and destroy you. Well, the man thought there was no problem at all. He had so many desires it would take him from now until eternity to have all of these desires fulfilled. So he said, what is your first desire? He said, well, all of my life I have wanted to own a very beautiful castle, the most beautiful castle in the world. Very well, he said, it shall be done. So he left the man's presence and he went. And he was gone for some little time. Finally, he came back and he said, your castle, I scarcely believe that such a thing had happened. He said, would you like to see it? Oh, yes, he said. So he took him to see this beautiful castle. And here it was, the most exquisite thing he'd ever seen in his life. And it was all real gold on the outside and marble on the inside. And it was exquisitely beautiful. It couldn't have been any more perfect. So he said, what is your next request? Well, he said, I have the castle now. I must have it furnished with the most costly paintings and all of the very most beautiful furnishings in all the world that you can find. So it wasn't too awfully long before that was done. And he was taken to see that. And he rejoiced greatly. So then he thought, well, I have a palace now. I must have a wife. I must have children. And so this was accomplished. Then he thought to myself, here I am with a palace. Why not be a monarch? So he wanted to be a monarch. And then he wanted subjects over whom he could rule. all of these things kept coming to him. And he kept spreading his desires for more and more territory and more power and more dominion over the people. But one day, all of a sudden, as he sat there, the thought came to him that he had everything he could think of that he had ever desired. He couldn't think of another thing that he wanted, and he got panicky. He thought, "My God, what will I do?" And he actually used the name of God. Here I am, without a thought, without anything to keep Satan busy, and he's going to destroy me if I don't give him something else to do. I've gotten myself into a terrible plight. So he thought, "What shall I do? What shall I do?" Well, he'd heard of a holy man down the road. There's always a holy man down the road. So he decided that he would go to him and throw himself at his feet and ask forgiveness and ask his help. So this he did. As fast as his legs could carry him, he ran down and threw himself at the feet of the holy man. He said, "Holy Father," he said, "you must forgive me for my terrible sins. I have done a terrible thing." "Well, my son," said the holy man, "what is this terrible thing that you have done?" He said, "Well, I had so many desires that, and I had no money to satisfy them." So he said, "I got somebody to give me a mantra, and I had Satan appear before me, and I agreed to be his disciple if he would grant all of my desires." And he agreed to do this, but with one condition. And that was that if I didn't keep him busy, that he was going to come back and destroy me. Well, he said, "He's given me everything that I can think of. I can't think of another thing that I want. And so now he's going to destroy me. You must help me. I plead with you." He said, "My son, this is a very grievous thing that you have done, to turn your soul over to Satan." He said, "Are you truly repentant?" "Oh, yes," he said. He said, "Holy Father, if you will only forgive me, and if you will help me," he said, "I will give up my evil life, and I will come and sit at your feet and put my full attention upon God and become a holy man like yourself." He said, "Very well, my son. If this in truth is what you really mean, I will tell you what to do. Now," he said, "you go back home, and the next time Satan appears before you and asks you what your next request is," he said, "you tell him to go out and get a long bamboo pole and stick it in the earth and run up and down that bamboo pole until you tell him to stop." So Satan got the bamboo pole and he started running up and down the pole. And the man left the place and went and sat at the feet of the holy man and himself became a great saint. And the end of the story goes like this, that finally Satan got so tired of running up and down the bamboo pole that he left the place and he never was seen again. So if you go away and leave him running up and down the bamboo pole, if you resist not evil and place your mind upon God, you see, then you too can become holy within yourself. Now this is in direct contradiction to another statement that Jesus made. "Resist the devil, and he shall flee from you." Now here we're told, "Resist not evil." Then we're told, "Resist the devil, and he will flee from you." But both are true, because one means that you shouldn't give power to evil by thinking about anything that you want to get rid of or anything that comes at you. But the other one is to resist the temptation which he puts before you, as he did before Jesus, the 40 days in the wilderness. And Jesus had the courage to say, "Get thee behind me, Satan." So both are true, don't you see? And it's tremendous when you stop to think about that. And you have these two forces in yourself all of the time, one tempting you toward God and the other trying to tempt you not to go to God. And that's the way it is. Now the moon in your body is your solar plexus. That is said to be your second brain. It is your psychic center. And you many times feel things here that are going to happen. And if you get into a room, a house, or a situation where it isn't just right, this works overtime. And you sometimes get the psychic feeling across your shoulders. This is the knowledge that comes to you. It's a hunch. It's a definite direction from God within yourself to stay away from what you're planning on doing, or from an individual, or from a place. And this is the moon. It is a reflection of this great light up here, don't you see? And you have all of the tributaries within yourself. And you have the seven churches, which are the seven spinal centers. These are the seven candlesticks. And they are lit up with an electrical current which is called a star. These are the seven churches that are written about in St. Paul, each one of them having given a name, been given a name. And each one of them denotes a certain state of consciousness as you climb this ladder of self-realization. Now, when you come to the place where you can fully surrender your life to God, when your love for Him, your yearning for Him, your desire for Him is so great that you are willing to lay everything that you possess at your feet, and most of all yourself, don't forget to throw your little self in to the ocean. Because if you hang on to that and yet get rid of all of your attachments and desires to your dear ones or your possessions or anything else, it will be of no avail, because that self, that little delusive self is still hiding around the corner. And it will get back in, and it will get at you, and it will make you bring to life all of the things that you've overcome. But when this blessed moment comes, when you're ready to give yourself to God, then these spiritual experiences start. Now, in the Christian scriptures, we are told about the subtle serpent in the field. And this is the serpent-like electrical force at the base of the spine. Now, usually, this force is misused because of overindulgence in sex. And every time this happens, we lose this precious fluid, this life force from within our bodies. And it takes us 7 days, it is said, to build this power back up again. Every 29 and a half days, there is a master or a Christ seed that comes from beneath the sacred cloister or claustrum underneath the brain. And it travels in back of the eyes, the nasal passage, the throat, crosses over at the forehead. Right here you have two, one at the base of the skull and the other at the base of the spine. And it is carried by the pineal and the pituitary gland. Now, these are the male and the female gland, or the Mary and the Joseph gland. Now, when this substance drops from this sacred cloister or claustrum, part of it goes to the pineal or the male or the Joseph gland and becomes honey-like in substance. And the other part of it goes to the pituitary or the female or the Mary gland and becomes milk-like in substance. And it is the Mary gland that carries this Christ seed. And it is carried by these two glands through the ganglion nervous system and is deposited in a little conical-like cave behind the stomach. Now, the word Bethlehem means house of bread. And so Jesus was born in a manger at Bethlehem. And it just tells about the Star of the East. And that Star of the East, all of this that is described in the Bible is right within your own being, this wonderful world of you. Because this is the Star of the East. And you will be taught how to go to this tunnel of eternity and to actually go through this star, which is the gate to heaven within yourself, and enter the kingdom of your heavenly Father. But this Christ seed is deposited in here. And then it is said in the Bible that King Herod, hearing of this birth of the Christ child, orders the heads of all of the male children cut off that were born around that time in order to get this one child that is supposed to take over his kingdom. Now, King Herod represents the passion or the sex force within you. And when the individual soul is going through this state, and it is a very strange state, strange in the scriptures itself, you know not what happens to you. This is so strange. But when this happens, then the sex urge comes within you so strongly. And the reason it does is because it wants you to lose this sacred fluid and to get this Christ seed and get rid of it out of your body. Because if it remains in hiding, as it says with Mary and Joseph, they took the Christ child into hiding until King Herod was dead or the passion subsided. Then they returned to Galilee. And that word means the circuit. It is given in your Bible dictionary. And so then it comes back up the spine. When it reaches this Christ center, this upgoing electrical current meets the incoming electrical current, and the final crucifixion takes place. And then the soul goes beyond into the oneness of God within themselves. The first crucifixion takes place at the heart center. And this is where the Battle of Armageddon is fought. It is that which the Hindus call the Battle of Kurukshetra. And the reason it is fought there is because this is the dividing center between the three lower ones and the three upper ones. This is where this battle, which is neutral ground, is fought between these forces of good and evil. And one lifts you up so high and gives you tremendous revelations, and the other one takes you down to the depth of your subconscious. And the soul is made to face the various things that he has done. This is another form of the cross, because as you start to return to God, you must cross on this return those things which you did on the way out. And if you don't like them, if you suffer, then blame nobody but yourself, because that's the way it is. Sometimes he takes you back into former incarnations, not all of them, but one or two, just whatever God feels is necessary for you. Because when this moment comes, it's just between God and the individual soul. The Hindus call it Krishna and Radha, because Krishna represents the Christ and Radha is the eternal soul of man, constantly striving to be the bridegroom of the Christ. We say that we have the original truth, but everything that is in the Christian scriptures was in the Hindu scriptures 5,000 years before Christ and existed so far back beyond that it is the time is lost in antiquity. But it was handed down by word of mouth from disciple to disciple until finally it was put in print. And it is said that the Vedas contain every single thing that pertains to man. And all that is in there was garnered and gathered by the wise men of the East, the Rishis, who became curious as to who they were, what purpose were they here for. What was this world all about? What was their part in it? And so they went into the laboratories of their own souls. They became spiritual scientists in the sense that they explored every facet of their being. They experimented with fasting. They experimented with different actions. They experimented with doing certain postures. They experimented with certain thoughts. And they experimented with concentration until they came up with this tremendous mass of information that all men can draw upon. Even medicine originated over there. And the Ayurvedic doctors are masters in themselves. And they have to be masters not only of the anatomical structure and all that it contains, but also of the emotional body, of the spiritual body, everything that goes with it, of the astral body. They are complete masters. I had the experience of being with one of the three remaining ones that are real in India. And he came, I had been through a tremendous experience. A child was killed by our cart, ran right out in front of it while we were traveling over there. And a beautiful little girl just like that. And it couldn't possibly be avoided. It just like that. And I was in such a state of shock, I wasn't driving, that I started getting big bald spots on my head. So I went to the greatest master that I had met over there, Swami Ashokananda, and I asked him about it, and he told me about this Ayurvedic doctor in Bombay and where to get in touch with him. So I did, and he came to the hotel to examine me, and he took hold of my pulse, and in 30 seconds he had told me my whole physical history. The surgery that I'd had, the years that I'd had them, everything that was inside and outside of me. It was the most fantastic thing I've ever seen in my life. And these are all in their scriptures, what to do about man in every single way, and yet we say we have a monopoly on it. This isn't true. This body is so beautiful, so wonderful. Just think, while I'm standing here talking to you, that everything within you is functioning. Are you doing this, actually? You're concentrating, hopefully, on what I'm telling you. But are you aware of the fact that your heart is beating, that your lungs are pumping oxygen into them, that your stomach is digesting the food that you took in, that your blood is circulating, that your elimination tract is working so to dispel all of the waste? And the wonderful thing about it is that this tremendous God power that is in every part of creation, when you take it into your body in the form of meats or fruit or vegetable or what or grains or whatever, you take that food in for energy. So your body is given energy by the food which you take in. And then the energy which you have within yourself goes to work and absorbs all of this energy from the food and then casts out the waste material. Isn't that tremendous when you stop to think about it? It really is. And yet this is going on all the time without your volition. Yet man says, I do this, I am that, I. And really, of ourselves, we do nothing. It is our Father who doeth the works. But the greatest privilege we have is exploring this kingdom within us, of actually learning how to transform this tremendous life force within us. And instead of wasting it through sex, misuse of all of our senses, that we learn to actually transform it into the divine. This doesn't happen overnight. It is a gradual process. I'm an absolute realist, and I know that I can't fight City Hall. So I don't ask for complete celibacy. Master did. He said that all of those that followed and really wanted God realization had to be celibates, and many tried, and many marriages broke up because of it. And I was talking to him about it one day, and he said, well, I ask for the impossible in order that I may get the possible. He knew human nature, you see, and he knew that this wasn't possible for man to cut off just like that, nor should he, because it has its place, and it is what this creative force is, what keeps this whole universe going. It brings new souls into the world, and there are so many who are waiting for rebirth, because it is said that this dark planet Earth is a planet which even the angels must come to in order to get their final liberation. It's an interesting thing when you think about it, that this is so. So this mud ball of the earth is a tremendous place. And we have this tremendous opportunity if we will but take advantage of it. I've told you a lot of things that perhaps some of you can't accept. They're new, they're brand new, and they certainly aren't what you've been taught in an Orthodox church. And I want to tell you that I was raised a Roman Catholic from the time I was born. But when I became 14 years old, I decided that I wasn't going to be a Catholic anymore because I couldn't accept all that was given to me, especially all the requests for paying the mortgage off on the church and what was going to happen to us if this wasn't done. And so much of this sin and the devil and Satan and hell and fire and damnation was planted into my mind that it left me absolutely frightened. And so I made up my mind that I was going to leave the church and I was going to find something else. And I started reading this and that and the other thing. And I remember the first book that opened my eyes was Marie Corelli's Romance of Two Worlds. And it was a brand new idea. But everything that I'd ever been taught was completely orthodox. My idea of Jesus the Christ. And I used to make the Stations of the Cross on Good Friday. And as I came before each picture which depicted this, I felt a very special feeling, a lifting up and a desire for something I knew not of, but I knew that I wasn't getting it here. And so I did exactly that, and I was an only child, one who lived out of seven. So the whole spotlight was on me all the time, but I had a very strong will. And so I went through with this, and when I was 20 years old, I met my guru. And it was quite a task for me to meet him, because I had been talking to an accountant who came to audit the books in the place where I worked, and we discovered that we had a religion and philosophy, and we had many long talks. So one day he came in just terrifically excited, and he said to me, Mildred, he said, Swami Yogananda is in town. He said, you must come to hear him. He said, I heard him last year, and he is one of the great rishis of India. I'd never even heard the name Swami before. I didn't know what a rishi was, and I thought, so what? You know? And I wasn't interested in going at all. But anyway, finally he said to me, well, I'll call my wife and ask her if I can take you, and if it's all right with her, would you go with me? And I thought, well, if it means this much to him, so all right, I'll go. So we got there a little bit late, and it was held in the Masonic Temple in Seattle, and it had a large balcony in addition to a large auditorium, and that place was absolutely jam-packed, and I think we got two of the last seats that were available, and we were up in the balcony. And I thought there to myself as I was sitting there, for this man must certainly have something to attract so large a crowd of people. And all of a sudden he walked out on the platform, and my whole life stood still because he had the most Christ-like face that I have ever seen in my life. He had beautiful, great big brown eyes just filled with the light of God. He wore an ochre-colored robe, and then he started to speak. And I lost all sense of time whatsoever. And this was at 8 o'clock. At 11 o'clock, he finished. And I didn't know that 5 minutes had passed. But this great man from India, one that we in our Christian world would call a heretic, an infidel, whatever, had put God inside of me. He made me feel all warm and comfortable. He made me know that God was within me, around me, equally present everywhere, and that I too could find him within myself, that I was God's child, that I wasn't a miserable sinner. He changed my whole life in that one evening. And then at the end of his speech, he said, I will go to the back of the auditorium, and all of those who wish may come up, and I will shake hands with them. Well, many waited in line for this blessed privilege, and I was among them. And I kept getting closer and closer in this long line. And the closer I got, the more my heart beat until I thought it was going to fall right out of my body. And finally it came my turn. And he took hold of my hand and he looked in my eyes. And this is the truth before God. There was an electric shock that went from my head to my feet that just absolutely shook me from stem to stern. And from that moment until this, I have belonged to him as his disciple completely and utterly. He was the greatest master that I think ever lived. And he was so human. He was full of fun as well as being divine. And he did so much for me. As I say, I've only seen him 12 times in my life. And yet the impact that he made was so great that he inspired me to overcome every single obstacle in my life and seek God realization within myself. Now, after his passing, I had to go to India, and I was under the jurisdiction of Swami Ramdas, who was totally realized universally, but totally impersonal. And he put me through this mystical crucifixion. And I learned things through the experiences that I went through and suffered through so terribly that enables me to stand and tell you the mystery or the truth that is contained in the parables of the Bible, because I actually lived it. I went through the baptism of water. I went through the baptism of fire. Moses in the burning bush is symbolic because Moses represents the law. He was the one that is said to have gotten the Ten Commandments from God. And the burning bush again is your own body, because when you start to go into this experience, this serpent force, which is coiled at the base of your spine, starts to go up the spine, and as it reaches each spinal center, then you are in the midst of this battle, and you are in a different plane of consciousness. And this goes up and up and up, and each center has a special meaning, a special world. And when you come to the heart center, that is the center where the crucifixion of the gross or the human ego takes place. And your heart is a sepulcher. This is the place where many of you may have read about the Gordian knot. That is where the life force is tied together. And so you go through two of the experiences where the consciousness is released first from the physical body, then from the astral or the electrical body. And then it says, the morning of the third day he rose from the dead. And that is when the tomb or the sepulcher opens, the heart center opens, and you can feel the release of this Gordian cord in this knot. And in my case, it was a terrifically painful thing. I was told that the teachings that I would give would be on a universal basis, and that I was paying for it on a universal basis, not an individual. And that's why mine was so difficult and so great. But individually, man doesn't have to pay that. But this hurt so badly that I felt the pain in my heart and the dregs of it for 3 years afterward. But then that is just the first crucifixion. And then comes the crucifixion of the 10 subtle qualities of the mind. Very few people, ministers, priests, rabbis, know, well, the rabbis aren't so much interested in the New Testament. But anyway, they don't know the true meaning of Revelations. But it does say in there that the beast came up out of the sea with a wound in its head, and the dragon again tried to seat the beast on the throne and have all worship it. Now the beast represents the human ego. That is the animalistic state in man. And when you go through this first crucifixion of the gross ego, then this ego is mortally wounded, but it is still not dead, because the memory of what you enjoyed in the senses is still in the mind. So there is the second crucifixion that must be gone through. So then you have to go through the three upper centers, which control and govern the higher parts of your being, until you come to this center of the medulla, which is the center of Christ consciousness, and then the incoming electrical current meets this master seed, and the two of them smash, and the final crucifixion takes place. You go over the top into the oneness of God. You hang your ego on God's peg, and then if it be His will, you come back into the world an enlightened soul, and you become a light to humanity. They don't see any change. As Jesus said, the prophet is without honor in his own country, because such a one wears the same body. He has more or less the same personality. He has the same habit patterns. But he has been totally, absolutely changed from what he was before. He has been purified because he had paid the price under the law. And therefore, he is no longer subject to the law, but he becomes the manipulator of it. Then he becomes the actor or the actress on the stage, and God takes over, and whatever God directs is done through that soul. In fact, the soul is a witness, and it tells in Revelations again about John witnessing what the Christ did. And that is the dregs of the human ego. What is left of that which was once human within yourself? Because you must have an ego, even after you've gone through the supreme experience, because you must have a center from which you operate. I cannot possibly think of you without first thinking of myself in relationship to you. So I must have some center from which I operate. And it is quite a thing to come down from that high estate and to work your way all the way down until you can function in perfect balance physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually on any level of consciousness with any person that comes before you, regardless of how low or how high that consciousness is. And you don't do it, but you, this one, this John, the witness, sees what is happening, what the Christ in you is doing. And it is an absolutely fantastic, amazing experience. Now you say, what a terrible thing to go through, or I'm afraid to do this. I'm just one small woman. I've never graduated from a school in my life. But somehow, because my love for God, my faith in God was so great, and my love for Him was greater than that for myself, I went through what was necessary. I went through this state of the death of the ego, and actually wound up in a state of rigor mortis. My body was totally paralyzed afterwards, but the will was there. It says in the scriptures, though he were dead, still he lives. And I am the living proof of everything I say, because I have lived through, I have suffered through, and I have conquered everything that I tell you about it. And if you think that isn't possible, then don't say you're followers of Christ, because he said, he who will not pick up his cross, which is his body, cannot and follow me, cannot be my disciple. Because man, when he stands upright with his feet together and his arms are outstretched, is in the form of a cross. And this is the true meaning of it, that it is upon man's own cross that this crucifixion takes place. The crucifixion is the complete annihilation of that which was human within yourself. And then you are filled, for once you were the ghost of the real self. You remember that it says that Jesus gave up the ghost. And that ghost means that it is the ghost of the real self, or God, within you. It is just a mirage. It doesn't really exist. But then, after the crucifixion, you are filled with the power of the Holy Ghost, or the divine ego. But still you have this consciousness within yourself that you are, and you can work in the world. It is quite a state to attain. And this highest state is called Sahaja Samadhi, and very few attain it in this world, it is said, and come back and live to tell the tale. There's a tale told in India about a salt doll who was going to go in the ocean and come back and tell of her experiences. But when she went into the ocean, she melted and she was unable to do it. And this came to me once in one of the spiritual experiences that I had after I'd come out of this. And I thought to myself, yes, I, my human ego, went into the ocean. I was a salt doll. And I went in there and I dissolved. But the spirit of the ocean gathered the salt once more again to her bosom and fashioned out of it a form which she put on the shore to tell all men everywhere that God is life and life is God. And that's the way it is. Each and every one of you have this wonderful Christ presence within yourself. You have all power to go within yourself and go on the wonderful adventure of discovering who and what you are, to explore your private inner universe, to really go to all of the planets, all of the stars. And you don't have to spend a zillion dollars to build a rocket in order to do it. All you have to do is to sit quietly in meditation, to give yourself totally to the infinite beloved. Love him with all of your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. And he will show you wonders that you never even dreamed of. And he will pour his blessings upon you so greatly that you will not be able to contain it. And as I've said many times, in my own experience, I went through so much for so long. 15 years it took me to go through all of these experiences and return so that I can function as I do today. How in the world, Lord, could you have asked so little of me when you give me so much? Because every moment I am in the consciousness of my Lord. Every moment I am filled with the bliss of his presence. Every moment his great love pours from my heart. And those that have been around me know that. Because I don't have any sinners in my group. I only have God's children. Some of them are naughty, some of them are good. But they are all his children. We are like beads strung on the strand of spirit, the golden strand of spirit, each and every one of us, the rosary of God. And we cannot be separated. And we cannot say, God is here and he isn't there. People are always running to the farthest corners of the earth, to this one, to that one, to the cave, to the mountains, to the ocean, because there they're going to get peace and quiet. There they're going to meditate upon God because they can't do it in the world. Where do they think he is when he's omnipresent? He's right where they are. And the man that has the courage to stay in the thick of battle, to gird himself for battle, who is subject to the greatest amount of temptation, and yet stands in the midst of it and learns to overcome it, nothing is ever going to tempt that individual again. And he becomes a God-man. He is no longer a slave, because that's what every man is. When he uses just the things of his senses and he fails to realize his own divinity. Do you not realize that you have within you the power to move not only mountains but worlds? And yet you don't go into this for power, because God alone has power. God alone uses power. Anybody that says he is a healer, anybody who uses power in anyone else is not a God person, because that person, that God alone, is the only one who uses the power. And his power flows through that form which he himself created. So how can any of us say that we heal or that we do one God-blessed thing? Learn to speak his name, to sing his name, until it goes inside of you and hums itself. Turn your life over to him completely. Know on one hand that it is he alone that does everything through you and for you, because he alone exists. But if you must have this idea of separation, then don't do things for yourself, for your family, for your firm, or anybody or anything else except just God alone. And if you do it for him, you give him the perfection of yourself, because how dare we give him something which is not pure? It speaks of the burnt offerings in the Old Testament, and they used to kill lambs and goats and offer them to God as a burnt offering on the altar. Well, the lambs and the goats are right within ourselves. But you see, the true meaning of it is this, that through the misuse of our senses, we burn up all of the purity within ourselves. And this is the burnt offering we give to God when it should be given to him in its original state, in a state of virginity. Remember that no matter what you have been, what you have done in this life or any other life, the time doesn't matter, because there are four beasts before the throne: time, space, the word, and the atom. And these are man-conceived. and these are what keep you with the idea of your separation from God. Let your light so shine before men that they will see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. And when that blessed day comes and you can feel the bliss that I feel this moment, you see my eyes closed as I stand before you, but it is because he has total possession of me. I cannot open them and look at you, but rarely, because I am absorbed by him. I am filled with him. And if I can do it, being the littlest of his creation, then each and every one of you can do it if you will but make the effort. If you will do so, you will find this wonderful world within yourself, and you will rejoice and be exceedingly glad.